Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our learning Ashari. We are learning Leilui Nishmas and Lezecha Nishmas and Amir in front. Rambam Bas Chaim Yitzchak, Alaha Hasham, Rishonim Shuhar Nishamah Shemeret and Aliyah, and she should be an advocate Latova on behalf of her whole family. So here we are, Mamish Arav Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av itself is on Shabbos. We will fast and observe the fast this year on Sunday, Yud Av. And I think that's very interesting how Hashgachas Hashem plays so interestingly and carefully into every single aspect of our lives. And you're going to see what we're about to read, and dafka where we're up to in the Sefer, specifically now, Erev Tisha B'Av. Like, we could be at any page in the whole Sefer. Nothing is planned. We didn't plan to reach here at this time, but it's very interesting. So, we're on page 125 in the second Sefer, in the middle of page 125. Last time we spoke about shoes, for those who were here, or if you listened online, we spoke about shoes. We spoke about Shasali called Tzarki, the bracha they make when reciting shoes, and we learned a beautiful piece of Rav Shimon Schwab on Tefillah. If anybody wants the handout and they weren't here last week, I brought them in case you want to take it home, FYI, to be able to go over for yourselves at home. When a person is privileged to feel Hashem is near him, he will pray for each detail of his life, even for the smallest things. Why? The depth of the matter is as follows. Who made the person need shoes? Did they tear on their own? Remember, in the above example, the person comes to the Chazon Ish and he says, I need shoes, but I'm too embarrassed to ask Hashem. So the Chazon Ish says, are you embarrassed to ask your father when you were a child for something? Were you embarrassed to ask your mother? So who made you need new shoes? Did they tear on their own? Why doesn't he have money to buy new shoes? It comes from Hashgacha Pratis, divine providence. That's a typo. It's not G. It's supposed to be an H. He brought these shoes. He had them for a year. As long as they were needed, they didn't tear. The moment they divinely ordained time for the use was completed, Hashem tore them. It turns out the one who tore them was the Creator himself. Okay, look at this bottom paragraph. This is where we're up to. Concerning the Beis HaMikdash, we find in the Gemara, it gives you the source, it's from Maseches Bava Kama, when a fire goes out and finds thorns, the one who lit the fire shall pay. So if somebody lights a fire and it goes out and finds thorns, the person who lit the fire is responsible. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, look at this, I must pay for the fire I lit a fire in Tzion, as the Pasuk says, in Megillas Eicha. You don't think it's like so strange that we're up to, when I sat to prepare, you don't think it's so strange that this is what we're up to of the entire Sefer? I don't think we've mentioned Eicha or the Beis HaMikdash one time in the entire Sefer. We went through the whole first Sefer. We've been learning for almost 4 years, Kenai Nahar. And now, where are we up to? Go from Eicha. What are we talking about? The destruction of the Beis HaMikdash.
My husband told me once that if you talk about something and you see it in the Sefer,
that this Hashem's maskim tark chabura. It's unbelievable. Yeah, it's someone told me that once also. That's right. So the pasuk says in Megillas Eicha. I just want to see if I can find the actual lashon for you. For 11, Kila Hashem eschamaso shafach charon apo vayatzas eish b'tzion vatochal yisodaseha. Hashem accomplished his fury. He poured out his fierce anger. He kindled a fire in Tzion and devoured its foundation. So this is the pasuk that our Sefer quotes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I lit the fire in Tzion. One pasuk says, we just quoted it, vayatzas eish b'tzion vatochal yisodaseha, and I will rebuild it with fire. As another pasuk says, and this is from Zechariah, I shall be a wall of fire surrounding her, says Hashem, a glory in her midst. When do we say that pasuk? Oh, very nice, beautiful. In Nachem, we say, Ki ata Hashem ba'esh hitzata, uva'esh ata asid lifno. So we talk about this very idea in Nachem. What is the comfort? You, Hashem, destroyed it with fire, and you, Hashem, will rebuild it with fire. When one recognizes it was Hashem who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, he turns to the one who destroyed it and asks him to rebuild it. And that's what we do. The Gemara says that when the enemy came to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, they destroyed an already destroyed edifice. I just think that it's unbelievable. This is where we're up to in the Sefer. Really, I think it's really hashgacha. So I prepared many insights specifically related to the inyan of Tisha B'Av and Churban, but specifically related to an aspect of tefillah, since that's what we're going through in the Sefer, related to this time period of mourning. But first of all, I have to thank Sima Geffen, who's not here, because it's at the end of Mishpacha, every week, there's the end note. It's about songs. You know what I'm talking about? I never read that part of the magazine, whatever. I don't bother reading it. So she sent me a picture, and she said, I think this relates to our class. And it was in this past week's Mishpacha. It was from the end note, so I went to look it up. And it's called If Shoes Could Talk. Last week we spoke about shoes. You read it, Avigal? Okay, last week we spoke about shoes. This week we're speaking about Chorban. No, not us, but specifically the Mechaber. Among the exhibits at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C., is a room filled with shoes that the Nazi victims were forced to discard before they were gassed. They have the same thing. If you've been to Poland, you've seen also in one of the barracks, I think it's in Majdanek, if my memory serves me correctly, there's a barrack just full of, yeah, it's Majdanek, yeah? And I was there like over 20 years ago. It's full of shoes. The words on the plaque next to the haunting, horrific display, this is specifically in the museum in Washington, are an unlikely inspiration for a song. But I'll leave it to Michal Schnitzer to take a phrase from that plaque and turn it into a song. The phrase is, okay, my Yiddish isn't so good, but Mir Zenin Sheikh, Mir Zenin Leitzer Eidus. Did I say it okay? We are the shoes, we are the last witness. Who speaks
Lester. Lester.
Oh.
Lester.
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 Okay, Mirzenin Sheikh, Mirzenin Lester,
yes.
Adis. We are the shoes, we are the Latin Waswinis, and he turned it into a heartbreaking song. Dear Sheikh Fartzelen. Fartzelen?
Tell us. Describe to us.
Okay, Schnitzler recalls, it's not translated, Schnitzler recalls the impact those words had on him, his on-spot decision to make them into a song. Years ago, my nephew visited the museum and sent me a picture of the plaque with the words, and the plaque says, we are the shoes, we are the last witnesses. We are the shoes of grandchildren and grandfathers, and because we're only made of fabric and leather and not blood and flesh, each one of us avoided the hellfire. We added lyrics that describe the journey of those shoes from all over Europe, where they might have been worn, the final journey, and finally their removal, while the owners walk the last few steps toward death. Schnitzer is a child of Holocaust survivors. His mother never discussed the hellish suffering she undergone in the Nazi camps. We knew nothing, he says. Until 10 years ago, my mother began to suffer from dementia. She began to speak in her native Hungarian, and some pieces of the puzzle emerged. For the first time, we heard about her job in Auschwitz. She was assigned to clean up after the medical experience of horrific Mengele Yimach Shmo. And it was he who composed the song. And when she sent it to me, and I went to look it up, what are we talking about? Last week, shoes. This week, Chorban. So, Hashem, of course, we dive into Hashem. What do we do in Nachayim? We're diving to the Ribbon Shalom. At Hashem. You, Hashem, you destroyed it with fire. Ata Hashem Ba'esh Asid Livnosa. But you, Hashem, in the future will build it with fire. So a number of thoughts that I wanted to share with you, specifically related to tefillah and related to Chorban. So somebody in my Ohel Monday morning class in November made Aliyah, and Malki Ben David, and every week she sends us an email to the ladies. There must be like 30, 35 women in the Ohel class. She sends an email, which I read out. And sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's humorous, or experiences about Aliyah. Sometimes she says she wants to get back on the plane and come home, but mostly they're very, very positive. But this week's was very somber and very reflective of the time period that we're in. But specifically, she touched upon a nakuda of tefillah that I wanted to share with you. And she said during this very difficult period on our calendar, reflecting on the tragic parts of our history, it's important to remember the Chorban that took place with the expulsion from Gush Katif. It was August 2005. I didn't notice 8,600 residents. Did you know that number? From 21 settlements in Gush Katif were expelled. Okay. One of the evacuees, Arifka Namir, came to speak at the OU Center. So Malcolm and David was at the OU Center in Israel, and they heard the speaker. She, a teacher, and her husband, Dr. Sadi Namir, and their 10 children were living in Neve Dekalim in the Gush Katif. I was once in Neve Dekalim because I spent my 9th grade year in Israel. My parents took a sabbatical. It was the year of the 1990-1991 Gulf War. And why do we go to Neve Dekalim for Shabbos? Because the missiles, Saddam Hussein's missiles, could not reach the Gaza Strip. How ironic that now, Nebuch, the people in the south are under constant rock attack because missiles could not reach as far. So we didn't have to take our gas masks. We didn't have to run to the Cheder Atum. We had a quiet Shabbos, so we spent Shabbos in Neve Dekalim. Dr. Namir is a physician. For 16 years, he tended to the residents and the soldier station in Gush Katif. Gush Katif, this is what his wife relates, was far from a hospital. He would often perform surgeries right then and there when necessary. They loved Eretz Yisrael. They chose to settle the land. They held on to their beliefs and faith. Hashem would watch over them. And against all rationale, they would not be forced to leave their home. And they showed at the OU Center actual footage of the evacuation. Let me say, I am not making a political statement. I am recounting actual events recorded that were played on this video. The Namir family refused to leave the home by the deadline, and the army was waiting outside to forcibly remove them. There's a reason I'm saying this specifically in this class. So our relatives had come to stay with them. There were many people in the house. Rivka's eldest son, 18, climbed onto the roof. He was ultimately dragged down by soldiers. After the army breached the entrance and broke down the door, on the video you could see men, women, children, and soldiers all standing and crying together. The next scene is of the army, the IDF who came to evacuate the residents, and the family members standing together and davening mincha. This is the last thing they did. The soldiers were there to evacuate the residents. The residents were there who didn't want to leave. And when they all come together and do? Daven. Remember, this is actual footage recorded for history. Do you process that? Okay, with tears streaming down their faces, afterwards the young soldiers, accompanied by more seasoned comrades, forcibly pulled the fellow Jews out of their homes. Dr. Namir refused to walk out on his own feet, talking about shoes. He was carried out of the house. The children were crying. There wasn't a dry eye in the audience. But I thought that Mika Amcha Yisrael, that only under such a situation where one side seems to be against the other side, really everybody's together. There might be confusion and there might be dissent, but ultimately the bottom line is they come together and they daven mincha. There's a similar story that I tell over in this class in the Menachem Begin biography, when members, remember when members of the Aguda came to have a meeting with him and there was dissent, and what did he say to them? Who remembers? He said in Yiddish, Rabosai, I can't say it in Yiddish, Mirhal. How do you say? Did you daven mincha already? Let's chapa mincha. What did he say?
Something like it's time for mincha.
Yeah, it's time for mincha. So you see that tefillah has such a tremendous koach to bring us together, even in the most difficult of times. And certainly the Zman Churban Bayis is one of the most difficult times. There's much discussion as to why the book of Devarim is, or the Parashas Devarim specifically, is always read the Shabbos before. Oyvei, thank you very much. Thank you. Why is Devarim always read the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av? So you tell me some reasons. You're so cute. Thank you. What are some reasons? Why is Devarim always read before Tisha B'Av? Hello?
Is that when Moshe ends everything? I mean, he can't go into Eretz Yisrael and gives over
the... Well, in this parsha specifically related to Eretz Yisrael, Moshe relates the sin of the spies. The sin of the Meraglim was the first Tisha B'Av that our people faced. He sent them from Kadesh Barnea to destroy the land. They come back. They say the land is terrible, we don't want to go there, and the punishment is you rejected the land, the land will reject you.
Tisha B'Av, the whole idea of rebuilding the base of Mikdash, we're all discussing Sinas Chinam, and we're all discussing Lashon Hara, and all the different sins that this may HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to destroy our edifice.
So therefore,
if I give you something, it's like my mother would say, I'd give you something to cry about, because you had nothing.
Yes, that's what the Gemara says in Tainus, Chav Tas Aleph. The Gemara says, the spies come back, they speak Lashon Hara, they slander the land, they turn the hearts of the people against us, so the people sit and cry that night, but Midbar 14:1, and the Gemara says, the day they came back was Erev Tisha B'Av, the night they cried was Tisha B'Av. So one of the reasons, one of the main and most obvious reasons that Devarim is always read, it has to work out, that Devarim is always read Shabbos Chazon and the Shabbos right Erev Tisha B'Av, is because of the idea that the story of the spies, as we told, the story of the spies, we rejected the land, so Mida Keneged Mida, the land rejected us. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see what's going on. You don't want it, says God? No problem. You won't get it. Another less obvious reason is in this week's Parsha, okay? After Hashem says you're not going in, does anyone remember from Parsha Shlach what happens? Then after God says you can't have it, now all the people, now we want it. We're going back. Moshe says, don't go up. You're not going to get it. It's like Yosef and the brothers. We spoke about that in yesterday's Shir. When do they get up to come for Father? After they sell Yosef. Maybe you should have thought of the fact how Father would feel before you sell Yosef. After the fact, you're getting up to comfort. After Hashem says you're not going in, now we want to go in? No, now you can't go in. And the contingency who tries to go in are smote down. You can't go in. And the Pasuk says, it's Perek Aleph. Remember, this is, I'm specifically focused around the Inyanim of Tefillah. Right? It's not just like a random Erev Tisha B'Av class, which will be fine also. Sometimes Elisha asked me to do that before I end up. He did not ask me to do that, but it's specifically built around tefillah, considering that when we open the Sefer, where are we mamish up to? He's quoting from Meir and talking about God destroying the Beis Hamikdash with fire. The pasuk says, after they're told they can't go, and now you want to go, and now you can't go. Vatashuvu, it's Perek Aleph for your reference, pasuk Mem Hei in Devarim, chapter 1, verse 45. Vatashuvu, vativku lifnei Hashem. You sat and you cried before Hashem. The first crying was because we don't want Eretz Yisrael. So Hashem says, you won't get Eretz Yisrael. Now we're crying because, maybe we should get Eretz Yisrael. Now it's too late. Velo shama Hashem bekolchem. Keywords. What does it mean? Hashem did not listen to your voice, v'lo ha'ezin aleichem, and he did not pay attention to ha'ezin, he did not give ear. Targum Unklus, v'lo kabil Hashem tziloschan. We've said many times that Targum Unklus' word for prayer is tzadi lamed, like shade. V'lo kabil Hashem, Hashem was not mekabel, your prayers. He did not listen to you. Kaviyachal, says Rashi, asisa midas rachamav ki'ilu achzari. It's as if you, through your actions, made the midah of rachamim into a midah of cruelty. So we have a pasuk in Devarim that says, v'tashuvu v'tivku v'nei Hashem v'lo shama Hashem b'kolachem v'lo hezin aleichem. What condition do we call that? How would you describe this condition?
Silence treatment?
Hester
Sonnen. What did you say? Silence?
Silent treatment.
So that is one pasuk. That is from Devarim. Vatashuv vativku lifnei Hashem. However, lo shama Hashem bekolchem, velo ha'ezin aleichem. What happened? Why are you smiling?
It's just cute what she said.
That's what you're looking for.
In Eicha, the pasuk says, okay, Gamki Ezak Va'ashaveya, Ezak, when I Za'aka, call Va'ashaveya, Sha'ava, two lashon of calling out to Hashem, Satam, or Sasam Tfilasi. When I call out, two lashonos of Tfilah, Za'aka and Sha'ava, one is calling out, and one is hysterical. I'll cry, Sasam Tfilasi. For your reference, this is Eicha, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Ches. I call out, and I cry out, and yet my tfilas are stopped. There's a stop on my prayer. They do not ascend. Another pasuk in Eicha. Okay? I could read more than one pasuk, but you don't have it in front of you, so it's hard for you to... Sakosa ba'af... Vatir defenu haragta lo chamalta. Why do we say sakosabav? You were surrounded in anger, God. They chased after us with killing. There was no mercy. There was no mercy with the killing. There's no mercy with taking off your shoes. There's no mercy with cleaning up after Mengele's experiments. Rachman alitzan. Next pasuk, sakosa ba'anan lach me'avar tefila. Sakosa ba'anan. You are ensconced in a cloud, may avar tefila. We have a concept both in Devarim and in Megillas Eicha that during a time period of Churban and during a time period of Hester Panim, unfortunately is the wrong word, tragically, we find ourselves in a condition where we see, Rachmana Litzlan, a form of silent treatment from the Ribbono Shel Olam vis-a-vis the people, that we cry and we call out, and it's too little, too late. And this is one of the worst conditions that our people face, the sense of Churban. Not just Churban, the Churban that is intricately linked with this sense of, or this condition of, Hester Panim. Sakosa ba'anan lach me'avor tefila. Gamki azak va'ashaveya satam tefila. See, it doesn't matter. I call out and I scream and hysterical outcry, and my prayers are not heard. My grandfather writes, and perhaps I have mentioned it in this class before, that when they were in Budzin, he says that's where the real hell began. And he writes, his members are called in 7 camps in 3 years. And he writes that we got back to, when we came back to the barracks after a hard day of slave labor on Yom Kippur, we gathered together so Nu'ila could be davened with a minyan. And he writes that for us, the heavens were closed, but all of us together pleaded vigorously for help. It's a quote from my grandfather's memoirs, Yitzchak ben Moshe, alav hashalom, zichron l'bracha. All of us together pleaded for help vigorously, but for us, the heavens was closed. Nevertheless, they got together to daven the Ila in the barracks after a day of slave labor. So for me personally, just a small nakuda, when I, you know, when the Ila comes and I can't, we're coming up to a very long fast and soon another very long fast, and when I feel in the Ila, I can't stand because I'm hungry and I'm tired and how long I've been stood for, so then I think of my grandfather and the Kedoshim and Taharim who stood together to daven in the barracks after their day of slave labor and starvation, knowing that there was no meal coming after the end of the day. And even though Sakosa Ba'ananach Me'avar Tefillah, and even though Vatashuvu Vativku V'lifnei Hashem V'lo Shama Hashem V'kochem V'lo Ha'azina Lechem, even though during Chorban specifically, why is Devarim always read Erev Tisha B'Av, besides for the obvious connection of the sin of the spies related to Tisha B'Av, that was the first Tisha B'Av in our national history, we have a condition that emanates during a time period of Hester Panim, where heavens are closed, Rachmana Litzlan, to our tefilos. Rav Salvecha comments, a similar idea comes up in the Kinos, okay? This is Rav Salvechik's comments on the Kinos. So, Kino number 6, okay? Sakosa Mishkan, once again, Sakosa. Sakosa Ba'af, we saw in Esa, in Echa. Sakosa Ba'anan, Hashem is ensconced in this cloud and ensconced in this wrath and this anger. Sakosa Mishkan, Miskos Divirai, you spread a canopy over heaven to cover my temple. The Paitan here laments that Hashem enveloped and covered the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash in a cloud. We're not talking about here the cloud of the Shekhinah in a positive way, rather a cloud, a barrier to prevent the words of the Paitan from reaching him. God has completely, listen what Chorban is, the worst Chorban is not that the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, and not even that we have to go into Galus. The worst condition of Chorban is, quote, God has completely alienated and separated himself from his people. And that's the condition of Hester Panim. That's the condition of silent treatment. That is, we gathered in the barracks to daven at Ni'ila with a minion, he writes, but for us the heavens was closed. Nevertheless, all of us together vigorously pleaded for him help. There's a similar verse now that Rav quotes from Echa, Sakosa Ba'ananach Me'avar Tefillah. Sakosa represents a complete termination of the relationship between God and the Jewish people, to the extent that prayer is rejected and cannot even reach the Ribono Shel Olam. He enveloped not only the Beis HaMikdash, which represents a place of prayer, Ki Beisi Beis Tefillah, Yekara L'Chala Amim. Not only is the Beis HaMikdash, which represents a base tefillah covered by a cloud, but any place of prayer in a cloud which rejects the prayers of the Jewish people. This is the menacing fulfillment of the verse on Lamentations. Gam ki azak va'ashaveya satam tefilasi. Even though I call out zaka, even though I cry, Ali shuts up my prayers. What is the condition of Chorban? Quote, access to God is denied. It's not then, listen to that phrase, that's a very important line. It's not necessarily then that he's rejecting our prayers. They never reach him, so to speak. Do you understand? There's a difference in saying rejection and access is denied. What does access is denied mean? You're not allowed in the inner chamber to plead your cause. It's not that you pled your cause and God says you can't have it. That's not Hester Panim. That's not Hester Panim. That is Nachshon Waxman's father saying to Nachshon's Rav, who was gave the Hesped on Motzei Shabbos, he said, everyone wants to know where our prayers answered. Tell them God heard our prayers, but he said no. That's not Hester Panim. That is Hashem heard and Hashem denied. This is different. Access to God is denied. So what does it mean, Sakosa ba'anan me'avar tefillah? In Skons, there's a barrier. We say the same thing. We're coming up to Elul, not in such a long time. And not such a long time, it's Elul. And one of the things we say in Slichos is we daven that the Mechitzas HaBarzel, Master Mechitzas HaBarzel, I don't remember the exact lashon, the Mechitzas HaBarzel, the iron Mechitza, partition, separating us from Hashem should be removed. So you're not even allowed in to plead your cause. That's why gam ka azak, gam ki azak va'ashaveya satam tefilasi. It seems to be that in Devarim it's an even worse condition, because what does it say in Devarim? In Echa, during the time of the Chorban, it's described as no access. So if you don't have access, it's not that God says, I'm rejecting your prayers. You can't even plead your cause. But what does the Pasuk say in Devarim? V'tashuvu v'tivku l'fnei Hashem v'lo shama Hashem b'kolchem v'lo ha'ezin aleichem. He didn't turn an ear to you. Furthermore, we say in the Kinnus, you concealed yourself and vanquished my strong men. The previous phrase stated God enveloped his sanctuary, prayer could not penetrate. And now the Paitan says God himself is enveloped as in a cloud, kaviyacha. And therefore the heroes of the Jewish people were defeated and overwhelmed. And now we're going to, he's going to touch upon a concept that's very important for us to remember. You know, someone just emailed me the other week something about her mother. I forget what the context was, that her mother always spoke about the tzaddikim who were Rachmana Litzlan killed during the time of the Holocaust. In the time of Malchus Bechoros, the Jews are told you're not allowed to leave your house. Why aren't the Jews allowed to leave your house? Hashem doesn't know the difference between the Bechor Mitzrayim and the Bechor Yisrael. So Rashi tells you when the Mashchis has permission to destroy, he can destroy everything in his path. This is the manifestation, in Avigayo's words, of Hester Panim, deliberate concealment of divine countenance. Hester Panim is only mentioned once in the Torah, it's in Devarim, it's in Vayelech, Perek Lamed Aleph. The consequence of Hester Panim, as the Pasuk says, is Vahaya La'echol. What does Vahaya La'echol mean? We'll be like fodder. We'll be like food for the nations of the world. We'll be consumed. And the Gemara in Bava Kama elaborates and says, during this time of Hester Panim, Rachmana Litzlan, God does not distinguish between the righteous and the evildoers. And a period of Hester Panim prevails, and everybody is Vahaya La'echol. It's a free man's game. Certainly, the Holocaust was a period of Hester Panim. God turned his back on his people. You know, I was learning today with an individual, an afternoon session, a one-to-one. And we were talking about, it's a different level learning. So we were talking about appropriate things to do on Tisha B'Av and inappropriate things to do on adults and inappropriate things to do on Tisha B'Av. So one of the things that was mentioned was watching sad movies, The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, or another thing that was mentioned was Schindler's List. And we spoke about not listening to happy music on Tisha B'Av. It's a different level learning. But one of the things that somehow came up was watching with movies. So I said, you know, also like if we, I said to this person, remember when we watched the Levi of Ezra Schwartz together, that would be an example of something appropriate to watch on Tisha B'Av. And then I mentioned, I didn't remember exactly what it was called. It's called Kol Birama. Remember Rachel Mavaka? Who am I talking about? Which music video was that? I don't know if it was Shrek. I think it was Simcha Leiner, but which, who, you never saw it? You should go watch it. You never watched it? The Fogel Family Massacre? Oh, the video of Kol Barama? We should watch it together. If you never saw it, you should watch it. So,
on the Friday night when they came to the house on Friday night?
The Fogel Family, they were massacred. Ruti Fogel and Uri Fogel and three of their children. Hadass was 4 months old and Alad, I think, was 11. And there was a four-year-old. Okay, you could look it up. It's very appropriate. Anyway, in the duration of our session, this person went to their phone. We don't obviously use the phones or learning. And they said, I just want to look it up. And they looked up and we watched it together. I'm specifically bringing it up. No, you don't. Please watch it. The Gemara elaborates in Bava Kama notes, when God does not distinguish between the righteous and evildoers, a period of Hester Panim, a period of total Chorban, a period of concealment, deliberate concealment of the divine face, so to speak, emanates. So it's to the words of Kol Barama Nishma, Racham Avaka Banan, Tamumim, and it shows pictures and videos. Nobody knows, there's a video of the family building what looks like a Lego tower, very, very high. The father's putting his children on his shoulders to keep stacking the blocks. And it shows scenes from when they're alive and pictures of them. And then Rachmana Aslan. What was her last name? Her name was Chaya Salmon. That was the Salmon family. That was a year ago. Ladies, that was a year ago. That was the Shalom Zachar. A year ago when the terrorist entered the home. So if you watch it, you see the videos of them. There's pictures and clips and videos of them when they're alive. And then they show that. They don't show you the massacre or the bodies, but there's pictures from the Levaya with the five bodies in Talisim next to each other in descending size, the father, the mother, the 11, 4-year-old, and a 4-month-old baby who's about this big. They show pictures of the surviving sister at the Levaya. There is a condition, Rahman said, if you don't know what I'm talking about, go look up Kol Brahma. It's very appropriate for this, for always Zachar, Sushal, Salah, Malik, and it's the quintessence of Chorban. Salvechik says, what's so bad about the Churban? The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. The Rav says, if you want to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, I guarantee you, you could rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. He says, I don't know if it's such a good idea right now, if it's something we should do, but technically you could lay a cornerstone. You could take a stone. He says, but every person is a Beis HaMikdash. Could you rebuild every person that was lost? Could you bring back Hadas for the 4-month-old? I remember at the time, the terrorists left the home. They were sleeping in bed. And they heard sounds outside, so they left the home, and they thought they were captured, and then they realized there was no there. So they went back inside to slit the throat of the baby who was in her parents' bed after they had killed the parents already. So Salvechik says, what's Korban? What's distraction? What is the sakosa ba'aname avor tefila? Gamki azak v'ashaveya satam tefila si v'tashuvu v'tivku v'nei Hashem v'lo shama Hashem b'kolchem v'lo hezina leichem. During this time period, Rechem al-Islam, when, quote, access to God is denied. So then the Gemara says in Bava Karma, in that time period, then the righteous will suffer, and the tzaddikim will suffer, and then the rishayim will also suffer. I mean, look, I just watched it this afternoon, and then I came home, and then I was preparing for the Shiram, and I read that here, that when God does not distinguish between righteous and evildoers, that's Hester Panim. If you have not seen, if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's on YouTube, it's, I think it's called Kol Barama, I believe it might be Simcha Leiner. It's a 4-minute video, it's very kedai. Vayeda Elohim, when the Pasuk in Shemo says 2:25, Vayeda Elohim, that is, the Vayeda Elohim, ladies, is the last pasuk before we meet Moshe at the snare. It is the awakening or the arousal of God's divine mercy. Vayeda Elohim is, Hester Panim is removed, and that's the Itchalta de Geula. What's the Itchalta de Geula? The beginning of the redemption. The moment, that pasuk, those psukim say 2:23 to 2:25 in Shemos, Vayishma Elohim esna akasam, Vayar Elohim, Vayeda Elohim, that Vayishma represents the Itchalta de Geula, the moment God starts hearing us again, the moment access to God is permitted and not denied, that's the beginning of the redemption. And of course, for the ultimate redemption, we're still waiting. The ultimate redemption, it's clearly not here. And the phrase in Eicha, you have covered yourself with a cloud, so no prayer can pass through. The cloud, in this case, in Eicha, is symbolic of Hester Panim. Quote, Hester Panim is a fate even worse than the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So what are we mourning for? We're mourning because only a building was destroyed? We're only mourning because the first temple was destroyed and the second temple was destroyed? That's not why we're only mourning. Yes, with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so there was the disappearance, if you will, to a degree of the Shekhinah, but with the galus that resulted, and with different levels of Hester Panim through different time periods, that's the greatest mourning. That's the greatest Chorban, because the greatest punishment of Chorban, the greatest punishment of Ata Hashem Ba'esh Hitzata, that's what I'm looking for, Siluk HaShekhinah. What's Siluk HaShekhinah? The disappearance, so to speak, of the Shekhinah from within our lives. And these snippets, sometimes to a much greater degree, like in the Holocaust, Rahman al-Islam, sometimes on a small degree, but there's no such thing as small. Can I say that the Fogel family massacre was small? Can I say the Salmon family massacre was small? It wasn't 6 million, but each person is a world. In many instances, interestingly, the cloud has conflicting connotations in Tanakh. In many instances, the cloud is representative of Hashem is very close. What was over Sarah's tent? Anan, Kasher, Abba, Oel. There was a cloud over her tent. What rested on the Mishkan by day? A cloud. And yet sometimes the cloud is represented. Sometimes, oh, quote, in times of intimate relationship between God and His people, the cloud is the abode in which God resides. The cloud is symbolic of the presence of the Shekhinah within the community. At times of Chorban, at times of destruction, in times of Hester Panim, the same cloud signifies God's complete alienation and departure from the community. The Seal Kashchina is the greatest consequence of Churban Beis Hamikdash, Churban Sion, and Churban Yerushalayim. The fact that Kaviyachol, God in a sense, to some degrees, has access to me is denied, that's the greatest consequence. And we see it both in Eicha, and we see it in Devarim, and we see it, Rachmana Litzlan, in modern times. So I was thinking when I was preparing, related really to the storm yesterday, I mean, like, it was sunny. Was anyone outside at that? I was after the main group shiur shortly after I got home. Was anyone outside the same time as I was yesterday? It was sunny. And 5 minutes later, it was pitch black. I mean, literally. And me and the two kids went onto the porch and we were standing with our mouths open. We made the bracha on thunder. We made the bracha on lightning. Rain was coming in sheets. But we were saying, we just came home. It was like, you can't make it. It was just sunny. It wasn't partly cloudy. In the morning, I said to my son, it's supposed to rain. He says, how's it supposed to rain? Look outside. It was hot. It was humid. It was sunny. You couldn't imagine it was going to be rain. In five minutes, the storm came. And that is how the Churban came. The Churban came with a suddenness. We say in the Megillah, I don't have the Pasuk on me now, but we say in the Megillah, one second. Peace Hashem, help me. Shavat misos libenu nehapach le'evel mecholenu. Shavat misos libenu. What does Shavat mean? What does Shabbos mean?
Stop.
Shabbos doesn't mean rest. Shabbos doesn't mean Shabbos. Shabbos means to cease, to stop. Shabbat. You stop from being involved in the mundane. You stop from work to be involved in Kedusha and the Ribono Shel Olam. Shabbat misos libenu. Shabbat. It's the word Shabbos. The joy in our hearts immediately ceased. Nehapach le'evel mecholenu. Our dances turns into avelis. And we know that Yirmiyahu left Yerushalayim. And even Yirmiyahu, who wrote Megillas Eicha, didn't believe that the Churban, nobody believed. Eicha Yashva Bedar Ha'ira Bas Yam Ha'isal Kamana. What does he say? How could it be? How is it possible that this Churban happened? And when he came back to Yerushalayim that afternoon, he saw smoke rising from the Beis HaMikdash, the site of the Beis HaMikdash. So he thought, oh, the people are offering karbanos again. The people weren't offering karbanos again. The Beis HaMikdash was on fire. Ki ata Hashem ba'esh hitzata. Even Yirmiyahu, the prophet of destruction, the one who prophesies, Megillas Eicha, who tells us about these terrible conditions that we should never know from such things. Rachman al-San, in our history, we have known about these things one too many times. Even these things that he prophesies about, he could not believe that they were going to happen. And nevertheless, to end on a slightly more positive note, I'm quoting from Rabbi Mordechai Willig in Shlita, in this season's Why You To Go, Tisha B'Av To Go, so my husband brings them home. Interestingly, he brings down, which I never knew. Did you ever know this? I thought this was very interesting. The curses of Vayikra, which parasha? Bechukosai, and Devarim, Kisavo, I know this, refer to Churban Bayis Rishon and Churban Bayis Sheni, respectively. He's actually quoting the Ramban to Vayikra, which I forgot to look up, which I wanted to look up. The curses in Vayikra, Bechukosai, says the Ramban, are the curses of Churban Bayis Rishon, and the curses of Devarim, Parshas Kisavo, are Bayis Sheni. They reflect the behavior of the masses, quote, and we just discussed this concept. We discussed it vis-a-vis Eretz Yisrael, we discussed it vis-a-vis the Holocaust and my grandfather's memoirs, and it's true during Churban. Countless tzaddikim perish during each Churban and during the subsequent tragedies commemorated on Tisha B'Av. Beitar was conquered on Tisha B'Av. Millions were killed. The expulsion from Spain occurred on Tisha B'Av, 1492. Many gave their lives. World War I began on Tisha B'Av, 1914, ultimately leading to the Holocaust and 6 million Kedoshim. And in each case, the rabbinic leaders exhorted the survivors to strengthen faith and to strengthen observance. They suggested teshuva for specific sins while recognizing that the martyrs were tzaddikim. One second. Often a subsequent event can be viewed as a message from Hashem. He has not and will not ever abandon Israel. When the corpses of Beitar were preserved and buried, Bracha de Chazal Institute, we say it in Benchen. Atova Hamitiv, into Birkas HaMazon. That's when you say Atova Hamitiv, who does good and is good. That's when you come to bury victims of a massacre. That's when you say is good and does good. Even that is Rachamei Shemaim. It was just the fourth anniversary since Hadar Golden was captured along with Aron Shaul. And they just had a memorial ceremony for him yesterday. Even for Kfuras Israelis, he is Atova Hamitiv. The Okay. In our world, can I end with this just a little bit, Chizuk and some Nechama? Often the purpose of suffering, whether personal or national, remains a mystery, to be revealed only at the end of days. Until then, we must have faith that what seems bad, he writes, what seems bad comes from the judge of truth, the Dayan HaAmas, and ultimately the good will be revealed. In this world, therefore, quote, we bow our heads when confronting bad tidings and we recite Baruch Dayana Emes. That expresses our faith that the judgment of the Ribbono Shel Olam is true. In the next world, the Gemara says in Maseches Pesachim, that we will even say over bad tidings, Hatov V'Hamitiv. One more beautiful mashal. He ends sort of towards the end of this article with this mashal. The Be'er Yosef, I'm quoting Mordechai Willig, illustrates this idea with a mashal. A city boy thought bread grew from the ground. So he visited a farm and he saw the field was being plowed. How destructive, he thought. Then he saw seeds being buried. How wasteful, he exclaimed. When vegetation emerged, the city boy realized his mistake. The purpose was to plant a beautiful garden. But then the farmer comes and he cuts down all the wheat. And now this boy is really confused. His confusion is increased. The grain is threshed, it's ground, it's kneaded, and then it's thrown into an oven. And the boy can't understand what's going on. Every step seems like destruction after destruction, and pounding and grinding and kneading and burning and burying in the dirt. There's no end. Only when the bread emerged did he realize the positive purpose of all the apparently destructive acts. Ata Hashem ba'esh hitzata uva'esh ata asid livnosa. We read it, we began with our sefer, and our sefer points out that the same one who destroyed it is the same one we need to turn to for Yeshua and Rachem, because it is he, at the right time, maybe immediately and in our days, who will rebuild it, and then Be'ezras Hashem, the relationship between us and the Ribbono Shel Olam will be repaired. Once again, Halavai, should be immediately and in our time. Imach Hashem Dima Me'al Kol Panim, V'Cherpas Amo Yasser Me'al Kol Ha'aretz Ki Hashem. Thank you, ladies. Yeah.